It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we hear in the world something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
When they bark, they don't sound like wolf, but the Texans are in the middle of a joint practice with the Panthers, and Braden Smith carted off the field. Now, from what we had seen, he wasn't going to be your starting right tackle. It appeared Trent Brown had won that job, but Braden Smith, a guy who was brought in to stabilize your offensive line and be your right tackle, in the Texans' final major practice of the training camp, carted off the field. He was down on the ground, practice stopped, and he got carted off. So that's all we know at the moment. But that's tough. Whether he was going to be relegated to a depth piece at right tackle or he was still in a spot where he could win that job, now that's all up in the air, pending an MRI and what the final evaluation of his leg is. It is a lower leg injury, and that's what we know so far. Happened about 30 minutes ago in practice. And apparently Allie Gay is another Texan who was carted off the field as well. He is a backup linebacker. The Texans have had issues with backup linebacker. Guys getting hurt throughout this offseason and going into training camp. And there's another guy who can't get off the field under his own power. Looks like they are hurt at the same time. Because with joint practices, by the way, it's against the Panthers. So the narratives would have been about, hey, look, it's Bryson CJ out there again. Who is who and where are they as far as their careers are concerned? Who's better? But as far as real serious conversations, the Texans lose two guys at the same time. And with joint practices, the offense versus defense for one team is on one field, and then the offense and defense of those teams are on the other field. So they get the reps that they need in these practices. So maybe within seconds of each other, two Texans go down, carted off. Maybe two guys who weren't going to start, certainly in Allie Gay's case, but two leg injuries for those guys. We'll see where they are. Neither one could put weight on their legs. That sounds bad. And it's the things we've talked about where you just want to make it through practice. You just want to assume practice is where you can't get hurt because it's practice and you're not having full contact stuff. And you just want to make it through the week knowing, hey, when this game ended on Sunday or Saturday or Monday, whenever the game was played, that guy walked off the field. I want to see him walk on the field the next time the team puts on the uniform, because how could he ever really get hurt in a practice? But training camp is the real serious threat, and the Texans have certainly suffered from it. Jaden Higgins last week, Braden Smith maybe this week. That's tough. We'll see what the final outcome is, but it doesn't look good for Braden Smith, who has a history recently of dealing with injuries. And all those conversations about what the Texans did to solidify their offensive line, they've changed pretty drastically over the last couple weeks, from Taylor and Smith and Rutledge to Trent Brown's winning that job. Rutledge is still on the field, but he won't play center. And Evan Brown, a guy we didn't talk about, is now your starting center. Hey, but at least we got some depth at right tackle. Maybe not.
The pivot to at least these guys, you know, take out the price. Yeah. It's like these guys are just good depth pieces at the very least. It's like, the thing about that depth piece is now you don't have it. So, yeah, it is not what you want. Like you said, like especially in like joint practice training camp stuff. If he gets hurt first snap of week one, there is like this is bad luck. But at least it was in a game that matters. You know, at least it feels like it was for something.
Sure,
going down like you said in a padded practice. Two guys on the same play is just like, okay, cool. Can we just in practice and like just get the game started?
There are sometimes when that happens, depending on the severity of the injury and the player in question.
Yeah.
Sometimes, we're not doing this anymore.
What was Teddy Bridgewater, right? When he tore his ACL, like yeah, Vikings practice just stopped and people were like,
on
like
the knees,
shook up about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Retching and crying. Yeah. And this one, it appears practice continued, but.
Ouch.
Sorry, Braden Smith and Allie Gay.
They don't love you like Teddy Bridgewater.
No.
Like the Vikings love Bridgewater.
You're not the starting quarterback. You're not someone all the hopes of the franchise are being placed on. But either way, it's not what you want to hear or see. The Texans are suffering from some injuries. And while it has affected the backup linebacker core, the only thing that you could foresee stopping the Texans defense from being elite would be injuries. Particularly because they didn't suffer very many last year. Guys were out there and played in games. The bulk of their impact players on defense just played. Very few missed games. And you would hope for that to continue. And so far, so good as far as your top line guys. But you are suffering some depth problems. And they signed a Houston Cougar yesterday to try to help on the defensive line at the end spot because they're trying to find some answers there. Because did we even mention that they did lose another defensive end to a season-ending injury? I don't think we mentioned Dylan Horton going down. He tore his Achilles. I guess maybe we didn't mention it. It happened within the last 24 hours or so. Dylan Horton tore his Achilles, so he's out for the year too. So the Texans, their depth is getting tested, and they have to find ways to supplement guys who have been knocked out for the year. It's football, and these things happen. The Texans were able to avoid it last year. It appears that won't be the case this year, and now we're just hoping for no major injuries before week one against the Bills with Josh Allen in town. I have a friend who was dating a big Bills fan, and she was considering coming because she spent time in Houston, coming to Houston for that game. I'm sure the significant other would have potentially come along. I was like, you sure you want to watch Josh Allen get tortured in Houston? Now she might be coming here just to see some of her friends. He would have come here just to watch Josh Allen have his worst game of the season. Cause that's all he does when he comes here. I was like, you sure about that? They decided not for that reason. They decided that week wouldn't be the week they came. I was like, I don't know how he reacts when his favorite team loses, but that would have been a bad weekend for him. Cause Josh doesn't have a good time here. And we're getting ever closer to Texans Bills week one. The Texans just have to survive. Can we just survive until week one? No, find a way to keep everyone in proverbial bubble wrap until week one so you can unleash the dogs on Allen.
Yeah, like Braden Smith and Jaden Higgins are like probably the two, more so Higgins than Smith, but Smith is like still in this kind of zone of like, season-ending injury in practice where you're like, oh, damn. But it's not quite like, all right, season's over. You know, like it's not quite like we're ready to pack it in, but it is like, ooh. Normally, you know, this kind of thing, again, happens like in week four and you kind of forget about it after the new guy gets his feet wet. It's like, okay, now it is just, you know, Trent Brown's job. But doing it before, again, 18 days before before the season even starts. It's like, oh my God, you're just so behind the eight ball, like you said, where, you know, if anyone on, especially the starting defense, goes down, you're like, oh, it starts to feel like dominoes, you know?
Yeah. And now with guys like Clowney, who isn't practicing because of his ankle, Dominic Robinson, another defensive lineman not practicing. They're just dealing with the end of camp, and those guys are minor ones that they're expected back at some point. The major ones are the ones they really have to deal with. Right now, one of the guys that they brought in to help, you know, Kayshon Boutte is in, or Boutte, we'll figure it out, is there in Carolina practicing with the team. He's working on the side, though, so he's not doing team drills, but during individual stuff, he's out there. But he is not acclimated enough to actually be out there with the guys. Pretty tough to learn the system and the plays within a day or two after being traded for. So, but he's with the team. And by the way, the Houston Cougar that they signed was Derek Parrish. He was brought in after Dylan Horton went on IR. So that's the update from Texans camp. Not a great one, as you're losing at least one guy who's part of your top, you would say, 35 players who, depending on another injury, would have played, and Brayden Smith may be out for a while. We'll see what the actual diagnosis is. All right, we'll go to break. When we come back, we'll talk some Astros, because last night was a good night. You beat the Yankees, and that feels good no matter what is going on, and there were a lot of things to talk about yesterday, because Jim Crane spoke about the state of his franchise, and I talked about the knives out for Jim Crane. Well, Ken Rosenthal seems to be leading the charge. He's not done. He had some more words for Jim Crane. Doesn't want Jim Crane to escape some of the blame for what has happened to this Astros roster. So we'll hear from everyone's favorite Jim Crane basher, Ken Rosenthal, when we come back, and also talk about the come from behind win as the Bats, who had been silenced by pitching from the Angels and the A's, woke up and came alive late against the Yankees to secure a win. I mean, it was needed, because the Astros pitchers were having trouble getting outs, except for one. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Alalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Alalea.
The Astros get out of town. They had that day off where all the drama happened, but they were back to baseball last night, and they beat the Yankees late thanks to Yordan, of course, with the triple, which is the big story. Not Yordan coming through, but a triple? Getting a third? Shout out to Yordan. And, you know, the fear of a kneecap exploding always runs through my mind. I was like, hey, you don't need to push it.
One base at a time, yeah, buddy.
And he slid, and I was like, that was unnecessary. He didn't have to slide. He slid in the third. He's like, let's not tempt fate, okay? You want a slow trot into third? I'm not even a real big fan of that. But let's not slide. He didn't even come around the score on the play, so... Actually, he did. Apologies. Yeah, he did. He tripled, and then Paredes singled him in that eighth inning. A big eighth inning for the Astros, because that was a back-and-forth game, really, from the jump. They got out to a lead. Yiner had a big day, a couple home runs, then even an insurance run driven in, or at least he singled to left, and they scored. Cam Smith scored on an error. But overall, beating the Yankees 9-7 with the bats coming alive is pretty cool. The Astros record is 66-66, and they're back in first place, because earlier in the day, Texas lost to, or maybe right around the same time, I forgot when that Texas game, when first pitch was, they lost to the White Sox in the second game of that series. So you're back in first place, half a game up. You're pitching, not great. Pecco in his second start, bad. But he is the epitome of, we don't really have anyone else. Just go out there.
Might as well be you.
Yeah, and if you're gonna, we're gonna, if anyone's gonna get sacrificed, why not you? You're just happy to be here. Go out there.
In theory, you can like learn from this and get better. Sure. The other guys,
yeah, who knows? Too late on who them. Knows about the guys who could have been in that spot, considering it's only his second career start. He's only 24 years old. But at this point,
the results aren't
good. And if if we have to let you out there to get beat up on for a couple extra batters because we just need you to eat up innings, that's what's going to have to be the case. And he went 4 1/3. He gave up 5 runs. And then Okert wasn't good. Abreu wasn't good. Was helped by a double play. But Hader did what Hader did. An inning and a third. Shut down the Yankees to secure the win. And Abreu, despite giving up the run, does get the win. The Astros, good start to that series in New York. Love to see the bats coming alive. And they'll do it again today, same start time, 6:05 here, against the New York Yankees. It'll be Peter Lambert, who has, let's say, there's been a downturn in performance. And it could be just the wall of never having to pitch this many innings. Is it a guy who's just reverting back to what he had been over the course of his career up until the 3 or 4 months of his first tenure with the Astros, his first season with the Astros? I don't know. I mean, Peter Lambert was kind of certainly a desperation thing to bring him back. And he wasn't really looked at as a guy who was going to contribute majorly this season. And he surprised everyone. But if you want to call it this, the regression to, hey, I remember you for the better part of your – no one remembers him, honestly. But unless you're a Colorado fan. This is who he had been.
Yeah, back of the baseball card.
This is who he – up this last month or so is who he had been before his early couple months with the Astros.
It definitely feels like he's hitting the France Blanco –
it gets them
Jason
all.
Jason Alexander wall.
It gets them all.
Yeah, and it is, you know, at a certain point it is like, well, you needed him to be your second best pitcher until August. Like that.
That's a problem.
Some of that is not completely on you. You know, like in 2019, Wade Miley hit a similar wall in August. But in 2019, you also had Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke. So, like, it mattered a lot less. For this team, it's like, oh, if Peter Lambert can't get it back on track, like, cancel Christmas. It's not where you want to be. And, you know, obviously he can come out tonight and, you know.
Do I expect a better effort than the 3 2/3, 9 earned runs given up against the Angels?
Better than that isn't hard.
Like, yeah, true. And, and the 3 starts in August before that blow up, 5 innings, 5 2/3, 5 innings. You know, two runs. So he wasn't getting crushed, but we weren't getting the level, particularly going deeper in the games. Yeah. He's not a guy who was going to generally go 6 2/3, whatever. But we were getting better performances for the most part. Just looking at just his game log, there are a lot of 6 innings, 5 innings, two runs. So you look at it, and at least the first 3 starts of August were in line with that. But there were times where Peter Lambert would be able to get you into that 6th inning. That has kind of stopped in the month of August. You hope it comes back tonight against the Yankees. You know what? I'm not even going to ask for 6. Give me 5 and less than 9 runs.
Yes,
perhaps less than 4. If you give me what give the team, give the city, give me what you gave, us the first 3 starts of August. That's a nice bounce back from what was a disaster that was part of an 18-3 loss to the Angels back on last Thursday.
More innings pitched than earned runs given up.
That's a good standard.
That's just like
whether it's 4 1/3 and the pitch count is high, so they take you out, but you only give up 3 runs. It's not a great outing, but we'll take it, and hopefully the bats are what they were last night. You can't guarantee that. It's pretty much once a week or once every 5 days the bats come alive now. Yeah. So maybe this is not going to continue, the bats, what they did last night.
3-1 loss coming up.
Yeah, right. Well, we can hope. Yeah, it's that that thing where, hey, guys, save some of the runs. They couldn't have done that last night. No. They needed every bit of it. But over the last two to three weeks, there's one game every 5 days where they score a lot of runs, and then the rest of the time it's in that four runs or less realm, and the pitching has not been able to match that because just of what has been an inconsistent staff all year long. Hopefully Lambert can return to some form, because it'd be nice to get him back on track, as despite all the things that are going on around the team that kind of speak to what the future is, the current is you got a chance to make the playoffs, and what else can you do but that? As far as the future, Jim Crane spoke yesterday, said that Joe Espada will be the manager for the rest of the year, and any decisions about his future will be made at the end of the season. We can speculate that decision's already been made, but at least the man who talked to reporters yesterday told us that, hey, that's an end-of-the-year discussion. We'll talk about that when it's time for that. I don't think there's much to talk about. I don't think there's much to blame Joe Espada for. You can get into some of the you want to talk about, hey, maybe a guy stayed in too long. Maybe you want to change the lineup around. Those are the things that the core baseball people love to talk about. But there was a cap to what this team could accomplish.
Yeah.
And that has nothing to do with the Espada. People already got their pound of flesh with Dana Brown. But Ken Rosenthal's like, hold up, wait a minute.
Seconds for me.
Yeah.
No, one more pound, please.
I don't know if Dana Brown has a guy who really loves him in the media and Ken Rosenthal. But Ken Rosenthal has taken the Dana Brown mutual parting of ways, which he scoffed at. We played that sound yesterday with the Astros, as a chance to point out all the foibles of one Jim Crane. And he's at it again. You don't like a contract that's been given out? Perhaps don't blame the general manager for that if you're an Astros fan, at least according to Ken Rosenthal.
So how much does Jim Crane have to take for blame for this?
Certainly a good amount. And they've made some bad decisions with contracts that were Jim Crane driven over the years as well. So, AJ, when you look at the whole thing, it's like with any team. It's always hard to discern, not always, but in many cases with clubs, it's hard to discern how much is the GM's fault and how much is the fault of the owner who might not be providing the resources that the GM would want. I can give you any number of examples in the game where that distinction is difficult to draw, where I don't know exactly if it's a money thing, if it's the GM balking at certain things. There are all kinds of things that go on. But certainly Crane is the owner of the team. He is the one who has said, we're not ever going to rebuild. Well, there are indications or times where perhaps you should rebuild. And you can make the case that the Astros could have done some things along those lines, but that's not the direction they chose. So here they are, and it's going to be really interesting to see who they replace Dana Brown with. Is it going to be another first-time GM? That's what they've done. Luno, Click, Dana Brown, all were first-time guys. Or do they get someone more experienced? Or do they turn it to Jack Bagwell, who is in the front office and clearly has influence? Does he want it? Do they want him? All these questions. And there's going to be some other teams, of course, looking for GMs as well. Two in their own division right now are unsettled. So it's going to be an interesting offseason.
Hey, let's not invoke that name anymore. I've seen it in print, digital print, and now Rosenthal has said the thing that most people don't want to hear. The thought that it could turn to a certain Astro legend, first baseman, to be the primary decision maker. Would I be surprised if it happens? No. By the way, whether it be first-time GM or past GM, I don't really have a preference there. I can't speak to who the right guy is. Just go hire a guy or woman who gets the job done. The question is, and it should be on everyone's mind, is Jim Crane capable, along with whoever else is advising him, of making the right pick? Because that's all it comes down to. Whether it is a guy we've never heard of or someone who was out of work who did run a baseball front office, it all comes down to Jim Crane. is he still capable of hiring the right people?
Hiring the right person and also getting his hand off the steering wheel.
That too, because there is no real evidence that with his hand, not even just one hand, most of us drive with one hand.
Yeah.
Most of us. Jim Crane feels like he's 10-2.
10-2, buddy.
With this franchise right now. There's no real evidence that Jim Crane at 10-2, although considered safe, is proper for this team.
No. And that is like, because, yeah, my stance is like someone from to hire someone who did an internship at the Tampa Bay Rays and get out of his way and give him money is kind of the...
Give him the ability, if we are competing all the time, give him the ability to do that.
Give him, you know, like the top 10, 5-ish payroll that you've had the last, you know, 5-6 years. I just don't have any belief in Jim Crane being able to do that. And I almost have, this is galaxy brain of, you know what, hire Jeff Bagwell to be the GM. Because
you want to run it into the ground?
Exactly. Just so he gets fired as GM. Because being the
de facto GM.
Yeah, the whisper in your ear. Like, he can't get fired from that job, really.
If you're Jeff Bagwell, don't take on the job where you actually have an official title.
Yeah.
First, I've already, not that he should be taking any advice from me, I've already said you shouldn't have come back to be in a spot where you're advising the team, but he wants to help the franchise that he loves. Understood. That is part of the reason that one John Granato took such offense to the comp that Jeremy Branham had for Bagwell. At least I didn't hear what Jeremy Branham said, but according to John, Jeremy compared Jeff Bagwell to Jack Easterby, which offended John. John has a history with Bagwell. John covered the team on a daily basis back when Bagwell was playing, so he knows him a little bit better than most, I guess, in the media. So he didn't like it because, and maybe rightfully so, he believes that Jeff Bagwell at least is earnest and wants the Astros to be good. He just may not be capable of doing it. But if Jeff Bagwell wants to have his hand on the wheel, don't make it clear that it's 10-2. You should have your seat leaned back. And you're kind of the instructor when a student driver is in the car. You can stop this car at any time because you got your brakes over here in the passenger side. But the other person's actually driving.
Yeah.
But whenever I want, I can put my foot on the brakes.
If they're gonna roll past an overpriced veteran first baseman, Jeff Bagwell, you could slam on that brake and be like, nope, sign him. 3 years.
Whatever your version of Christian Walker or Jose Abreu is.
The next guy.
In like 2028, whenever baseball is a thing again, after an apparent work stoppage, you can always put your foot on the brake, but you don't want to be the guy who's clearly driving the vehicle. That ain't good for you.
No.
And the blame falls on you.
That guy gets fired.
And then or your contract just runs out.
Yeah. That guy takes your advice or, you know, gets outmaneuvered by you because you just basically go over his head to Jim Crane. And then it doesn't work out. That guy gets fired. You stay Jeff Bagwell. If Jeff Bagwell is the GM, Jeff Bagwell eventually would get fired. Like, that's the thing. But I would prefer But that is the galaxy brain.
My preferred
would be Jim Crane, you know, looks himself in the mirror and be like, wait, I built one of the, I mean, definitely the best dynasty of, you know, the 2010s, made 7 straight ALCSs by hiring Jeff Luhnow, a cutting edge smart guy in baseball, and staying out of his way for 5 years. Maybe I should get back to that. Maybe that winning formula should be returned to. And the more and more I, you know, want to exert power on my team, which you have every right to do as the owner. But
that's
as I do
problem,
results go down.
He's
every time
apparently
he does that.
Aware of that, and then decides I do have every right. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And well, when you own a team, you can do it. But you would just hope that there is some self awareness about how it was run and maybe how it should be run in the past. He did mention that they're going to learn. There's a time to learn from how others are doing it because they're not the top of the league anymore. So maybe there is some humility there. We will see with that, and we will see the plan when it comes to building this thing back up. Whether they do it by spending loads and loads of money feels feels like that won't be the case. And they will consistently tell you that they're in the top 10 in spending. So it's very hard to fight them on that. We'll see where they are when now that the McCullers deal is off the table and the Javier deal goes away. So we'll see if they will spin to that level.
Yeah.
Now that the bad money they've thrown out there is gone.
Still got the EMI money.
Yeah.
And they basically replaced you remember the when we McCullers were money.
Sweet summer children and thought, you know, EMI may pitch so well, he may go opt out and go get a better deal someplace else.
That's the downside to this
deal. Yeah.
Now, the downside to this deal is that he
now stinks. we can only pray that he loses his mind and goes, you know what? I don't like Houston. I want out.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel likely. All right. So Astros win. They've got moves to make. And I saw way too much of Brad Ausmus and Jeff Bagwell being mentioned. I prefer clean slate.
You know, normally they get posted as them as players. And so I get a little bit of like, you know,
nostalgia.
Childhood nostalgia. And then I see like, oh, wait, they're talking about them being
because
the brain trust.
Because Ausmus was a finalist for the GM job the last time around.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes.
Before they went with Dana Brown, so let's not revert back to that list, because if that's the list you made, and Dana Brown was the best choice, maybe the list wasn't a good one.
Reevaluate things.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, yeah. We will see. It's years later. Maybe I'm sure there are other names that have come across, and as you said, while you kind of derided the Texans for hiring someone near Sean McVay. You don't apparently if they're near the Tampa Bay Rays, you're okay with that.
Coffee boy from the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
So whichever nerd walks into this interview with holding a calculator, hire him.
Yeah, and he just happens to take off his Tampa Rays hat as he's walking into the interview room.
Sure,
grab that guy.
Yeah,
or woman, whoever it might be. All right, we'll go to break with that. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. We'll see if there are any concerning updates from Texans camp since the last time I looked. Hopefully not. I did see that Jalen Knowles having a pretty good day as he is making his way back from his injury. So that's good to see. We will get into why maybe we shouldn't consider it a win that the Texans made the trade for Kayshon Booty. We'll hear from Elliot Wolf, the Patriots GM, on why they made the move to trade away, which would be probably their fourth receiver. They did it for a safety and a pick. Also, in college sports, the conferences are saying no to pros. We'll pay you like a pro to play for our school, but only if you didn't sign a pro contract and then come back. So there's that to get to it. And I've said it, I think, a couple times we were going to get into quarterback news, and we just never get to it as we get ever closer to the season with games actually kicking off tomorrow. Not games you're going to care about, but you certainly can bet on them. But we got games on tomorrow, and then we got games on Saturday. So college football is here. So we'll talk about some of the quarterbacks around the country who won their quarterback competitions. And also, my fantasy of why Jed York did what he did, down the drain. We found out more about why Jed York did what he did as the reporting continues on that story. We'll get to that at some point. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. Texans are having a pretty good day against the Panthers outside of, you know, potential major injuries. But as far as what's going on in the field, all the reporters are saying Texans, particularly their defense, dominating that Panthers offense. Well, they traded away from their defense and added to their offense when they grabbed Kayshon Booty from the Patriots. We've heard at least our opinions on the matter. You guys have heard from many people talking about it here in town. We haven't heard from the Texans on that yet. Maybe now that Booty's with them in Carolina, we'll hear from D'Amico on that today after practice. Nick Caserio hadn't spoken about it yet, but the Patriots GM, Elliott Wolf, did. So here's Elliott Wolf on why they made the trade to acquire a Texan safety, Jalen Reed.
Jalen Reed trade. You know, Jalen was a guy that we identified in the draft process as someone that we might pick, and he ended up going before we could take him. Followed his career last year with Houston, and thought it was pretty remarkable that, you know, as a rookie who hadn't played much during the regular season, that they trusted him enough to play the majority of the playoff games and just continue to follow him. And when we determined that he might be available, that he was someone that we wanted to acquire. Thank Kayshawn for everything over the last 4 years or 3 years that he was here. Showed tremendous growth and progress as a person and a player. And, you know, excited for him and his opportunity. But this was about the Patriots and doing what's best for our organization.
Elliott Wolf on the acquisition. And Sean noted he called it the Jalen Reed trade. What? I mean, it's a Kayshawn Booty trade here. It's a Jalen Reed trade there. I mean, and he thanked Jalen for his contributions. But look, the Patriots went out and really devoted resources to their receiver core. Dobbs and A.J. Brown brought in this offseason, one through a free agent signing, the other through trade. That speaks to how they thought of their wide receivers. They went out and got two guys who they think are majorly going to improve that. So we had the caller, Rashid, calling about it, about Booty and what he could be for the Texans either this year or next year, particularly in the future if he does well, getting himself a new deal. We just saw a team say, not good enough. They would have kept him on the roster, but he wasn't good enough to be their one or their two, and he's not really a slot, so that goes to Pop Douglas. He was, and if you look at their targets for last year, it was Diggs, a tight end, and Mac Hollins was targeted more. Booty was more productive because he's a bit of a big play guy. Mac Hollins, straight line guy, he can get down the field a little bit, better known for not wearing shoes in inappropriate places at this point. But by that, I mean just randomly walking into the facility without shoes. That's a Mac Hollins thing. But he was targeted more than Booty. So if you just go by targets, he was maybe their fourth or fifth most important, at least in Drake May's eyes, weapon. Or maybe simply his route tree didn't allow for more targets. So I applaud the move in a way that I would applaud something a general manager does, like a soft golf clap. Credit to Nick Caserio for finding a team to trade you and at least a real wide receiver for not very much. But that might speak to what to expect when the Patriots are looking at him and going, expendable, wasn't even a big part of our plans last year as far as target share. We'll trade him for a late third day pick and one of your safeties who you don't expect to play very much. So I am cautiously optimistic about the move. I'm not sure it's going to be the game changer that the pundits on ESPN are talking about, because it's a segment involving a trade. So they got to really be in it. It's like, really hype it up. Guys,
it was a guy coming off a sixth round rookie season and a seventh round pick.
Yeah, like, that is what was traded for.
This is the Xavier Hutchinson not quite ready for full season
of
full 17 games
of being the wide receiver too.
Yeah, it's like let's
have another option.
Yeah, at least they have them. You know, you don't really think about it like this in the same way as a running back, but you know, they just can share the wide receiver two spot and, you know, ride the hot hand depending on the game or scheme or whatever, you know, matchup. Yeah, it is something where it's like, this is 100% a move out of desperation. Like, and that's why and it didn't cost anything or hardly anything. So that's why it's like, it's hard for this to be a bad trade for the Texans. It is just how, you know, what is the upside on it? Like, how much of a game changer can you realistically expect Booty to be?
Yeah, because even if Booty went out there with oven mitts because he was protesting the move, okay, he's he's a malcontent. He gave up Jalen Reed in a late round pick. Who cares? You move on. Hopefully, the upside of some of his big play potential comes to the forefront. Yeah. But
hey.
I just started to look at the targets and go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What do we? Let's relax and hopefully it works out. We'll go to break with that. You want to join us? 713-780-3776 is the number. We'll do some college football when we come back because there have been announcements made about how conferences are going to react to players who either signed with the pro team, were in a camp, whatever. The SEC had a really extensive list as they tried to cover all their bases to keep guys from working their way in to finding a spot on one of their rosters for the upcoming season. The Big Ten is in line with that. The Big 12 seems to be following the ACC. So all the Power Four conferences are saying, nah. For this, it's a lot of noise for what may be 15 players for 1 year. But because, as Paul Feinbaum said, college football is going into the abyss, everyone's getting active. We pointed it out yesterday that if the NCAA had gotten active simply months earlier, this wouldn't be a problem. But they enacted a rule that allowed for this loophole to happen for some of these players, and now the conferences are responding because college football is nothing if not reactive as opposed to proactive. We'll go to break with that.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.